I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this is a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Maurice Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin. Unlike the United States, which since the Civil War has fought its military battles away from home, France has a long history of domestic conflict. Allow me to list just a few events. We begin with the Revolution of 1789, the Napoleonic Wars of the early 19th century, the revolutions of 1830 and that of 1848, the Franco-Prussian War of 1870 and 1871, and World War I, the Great War of 1914 to 1918. Maurice Ravel, born in 1875, just after the defeat of France in the Franco-Prussian War, was old enough to witness up close and personal the horrors of the Great War. At age 18, he was not conscripted into the army as he was judged too short and frail to serve. If a picture is worth a thousand words, his friends described him as looking like a well-dressed jockey. When the war broke out on July 28, 1914, Ravel was working on his piano trio and caring for his 74-year-old mother. Ravel, like so many of his fellow countrymen, was caught up in patriotic fervor. France had been soundly defeated by the Germans in the Franco-Prussian War, and the nation was ready to even the score. The war, of course, would, like all wars, be short, the casualties light, and everyone would be home by Christmas. Ravel wanted to join the Air Force and felt his diminutive size would be an advantage. True, the cockpits of World War I planes were small, but Ravel, age 39, and his frailty probably ruled him out. Can you imagine the delicate Ravel in the open cockpit of a Spad or Newport? I don't think so. Undaunted, Ravel looked for ways to serve his country. After finishing his piano trio, a fabulous piece, he became a nurse's aide in Saint-Jean-de-Luz, very close to his home, so he could continue to care for his aging mother. Not satisfied with this contribution to the war effort, he volunteered in March of 1915 and became a truck driver for the 13th Artillery Regiment. Now he was very close to the front at Verdun and was responsible for transporting munitions to the troops, often at night and under fire. Ravel nicknamed his truck Adelaide or Adelaide, whether it was after the Beethoven song or some beautiful French girl, who knows, and occasionally signed his letters Chauffeur Ravel. The war and the death of Ravel's mother in early 1917 eventually took their toll on the composer's health, and he was discharged that year. Ravel retired to the country house of friends and there completed Le Tombeau de Couperin. In its original incarnation, it was for solo piano. The original idea for the work began before the war in July of 1914, when the composer began thinking of a suite française, something in the French style for solo piano. Patriotic sentiments and the carnage of the war turned the work into something else. If we are talking about Le Tombeau de Couperin, we must confront two obvious questions. One, what is a tombeau? And two, who is Couperin? Fortunately, I went to music school and have answers to both of these questions. Tombeau literally means the tomb or tombstone of, but for our purposes, refers to a memorial composition. Often one composer would write a tombeau on the passing of another. These were often written for lute or keyboard and were fashionable in the 17th century, especially in France. The Couperin in question is probably François Couperin, the greatest member of a famous French musical family. François, known as Couperin le Grand, the Great Couperin, lived from 1668 to 1733. Though Ravel was probably paying tribute to the French Baroque tradition as a whole, rather than Couperin specifically, Le Tombeau de Couperin sounds much more inviting than Le Tombeau de 18th century French musique. Ravel organized his tombeau as a series of dances and Baroque instrumental pieces in the manner of a French Baroque suite for keyboard. The original piano suite had six movements: prelude, fugue, forlène, minuet, rigaudon, and toccata. Each movement was dedicated to a friend of Ravel's who was killed in the war. The premiere was given by pianist Marguerite Long on April 11, 1919. Her husband, the late captain and musicologist Joseph de Marliave, killed in August of 1914, was the dedicatee of the last movement, the toccata. The work was enthusiastically received by the audience, who asked for and received an encore of the complete piece. Later that year, Ravel left Paris for the town of Lyon-la-Forêt, where he orchestrated four of the six pieces, leaving out the fugue and the toccata. The orchestration is one of Ravel's finest, using a small chamber orchestra to tremendous effect. While Ravel was certainly capable of writing for huge orchestra in pieces like Pictures at an Exhibition, orchestrated in the same house as Le Tombeau de Couperin, he was just as brilliant with smaller forces. The suite begins with a prelude, a very common practice in the Baroque period. The movement is dedicated to the memory of First Lieutenant Jacques Charlot, who transcribed Ravel's Mother Goose ballet for solo piano. Right from the get-go, we realize the oboe is going to play a significant, almost solo role in this piece. Ravel's writing is so transparent, so deft. The word gossamer is so overused, but that's what we seem to have. Even the trumpet, when used in a solo passage, is a model of restraint. After its brief solo, it's handed off to the English horn. At the end of the movement, Ravel throws in the harp in the most elegant French manner, comme il faut. The second movement is a forlen, a dance from the Friuli region of Italy, northeast of Venice, bordering Slovenia. The dance is in 6/8 with a quick tempo. The piece was written in memory of First Lieutenant Gabriel Deluc, a Basque painter from Ravel's hometown of Saint-Jean-de-Luz. Ravel's dance is marked allegro, and you have to wonder if the Slavic influence from Slovenia isn't a part of this music. The piece uses lots of small repeated sections and was strongly influenced by an actual forlen of Couperin's from his Concert Royal No. 4. The dance proceeds in its lovely neo-baroque way until just about the end, when we get to an unscheduled trip to the 20th century. The third movement, a minuet, is a stately dance in three with a contrasting section in the middle. This was written in memory of Jean Dreyfus, who opened his home to the composer after he was discharged from the army, and it was there that Ravel was able to recuperate. The contrasting middle section has bagpipe or musette-like drones, but with modern harmonies. The ninth chord that ends the minuet is frankly delicious. The final movement is a rigodon, a fast French Baroque dance in double meter. The movement is dedicated to the memory of Pierre and Pascal Gaudin, two brothers and childhood friends of Ravel, killed by the same shell in November of 1914. Despite this awful description, the music is nothing short of delightful. The movement is in ternary form, ABA, A being a fast section. And here is the contrasting B slower section. So what's great about Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin? First, it's a beautiful example of music that looks both forward and backward. Its form is neo-baroque, but its delightful harmonies and spectacular orchestration come straight from Ravel's own 20th century genius. Second, it's a work that is both genuinely popular as well as being artistically satisfying. It's hard to imagine someone not enjoying this music or being moved by it. Third, it celebrates French nationalism in the most wonderful way. Rather than write a setting of La Marseillaise or some patriotic claptrap, Ravel has written a piece which celebrates some true French values: elegance, grace, taste, brevity, and beauty. Postscript. After hearing the piece, many people were startled by Le Tombeau de Couperin's non-elegiac nature, something not usually found in a memorial piece, especially one written at such a dark time in the nation's history. Ravel replied, "The dead are sad enough in their eternal silence." I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this has been a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Maurice Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin.